happens to them as the result of their abusive behavior. But we wondered about the pets. What becomes of them? Today we find out. We're joined by four people who volunteer their time to rescuing and rehabilitating abused animals. Daryl Wagner is president and director of Fur Babies Animal Rescue. Their mission is to rescue and find safe and loving foster homes and ultimately adoptive homes for abandoned, stray, and neglected dogs. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Tim Roney is the founder of Hope for All Dogs, an organization that rescues stray and unwanted dogs from high-kill shelters before they are euthanized. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome. Megan Masters is an animal advocate and owner. Are you ready for this? Stand by. Owner of Madam Masters House of Burlesque.
Thank you for having me.
I'm not done with you yet.
We'll see. By the end of the show, you will be.
They happen to be sponsoring a show, 100% of the proceeds of which will go to both Fur Babies and Hope for All Dogs. That show will be 6 p.m. April 26th at Amos' South End. We'll talk about that later. And Kristen Johnson is a strategy executive at Bank of America by day, but is also a rescue volunteer at what is probably the area's most well-known animal rescue organization, at least to me it is, the Greater Charlotte Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. She was part of the original group that formed that organization in 2010 and is a board member today. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
In Charlotte, how big is this problem of abused, abandoned, neglected pets that simply are set free because they or pets that are simply set free by the owners because they can't afford to take care of them? How big a problem is this? I'm not sure which one of you should answer that, so just take a stab at it.
I think we probably
ahead,
all could answer.
Okay.
Obviously, it's a huge problem, not just in the Charlotte area, but all over the country. The Southeast, however, is probably one of the highest areas. I think education. I think that we are a little behind in educating the general public about spaying and neutering their animals, the overpopulation, the lack of groups that are championing the animals, and just, you know, general.
Do we take a different attitude about pets in the South? I mean, it's because we have historically been more rural and animals have been left, you know, outside a lot. They're not necessarily house pets. And if they're outside, they aren't family members. They're animals.
That's, I think you're absolutely hit the nail on the head. Yes. I think that people do in rural areas sometimes think that way more often. We have a lot more dogs that are outside pets.
And does that creep into the suburbs somehow? Or
it does.
The urban core somehow?
Sure, it does.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to overemphasize the plight. I mean, to be clear, there are some fantastic rural pet owners who do happen to keep their animals as working animals. I mean, think of the collies on farms that bring together the cows and that sort of thing. So I very much agree that there's a distinction between what we see in the more dispersed rural areas and what we see in the urban settings, but it's not a clear black and white good and evil towards animals by any stretch.
Well, Kristen, you say that in 2014, just your organization helped 902 animals. We're just over 3 months into the new year. How many animals have you helped so far this year?
In 2015, more than 200 already, and that number is rising literally every day as we pull from animal control.
So is that, if you go year to date, if you were this time last year, where would you be? You're a banker. You do things analysis like this all the
That's
time.
That's right. I love numbers. if my boss is listening, he'll be delighted to hear that. But about this time last year, about the same. When we originally started, Mike, we thought we would maybe save 50 to 100 animals a year. And we have exceeded that goal so amazingly since 2010. Partially, I might add, because although the Greater Charlotte SPCA, I'm very proud to be part of it, we do make a point to network and partner with other rescue groups as well, because none of us are islands, right? This is a group effort. And I don't mean to sound like I'm suddenly going to start singing an anthem here, but we need everybody who's involved in rescue to pull together around this problem. I mean, back to your original question, I mean, it's huge. Just look at your Facebook stream, Mike. I mean, every day, those of us in rescue are bombarded by these graphic pictures, everything that has happened. We hear every story. In fact, there's often memes that go around on Facebook for those of us in rescue that list the excuses that we hear. I'm moving and I can't take my pet. Mm-hmm. I had a baby and I can't take my pet. And in some cases, let me be clear, those are very legitimate.
Absolutely.
But in many cases, it's an excuse for abandonment. abandonment.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you, your organization, Hope for All Dogs, Tim, as I described it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, rescues stray and unwanted dogs from high-kill shelters. So explain this to me. You actually go to locations where they have where they keep dogs and cats for a period of time, and then if they're not adopted, they are going to be euthanized, and you take them from that situation. Is that what you do?
Yes, we do. Hope for All Dogs, one of our main purposes is we mainly rescue senior and special needs animals. There's an overwhelming need for rescues for that environmental for dogs like that. Mm-hmm. Most of our dogs do come from animal control facilities. We usually get emails about dogs that are going to be euthanized, and that's something that's put out daily, and the need is completely overwhelming. There's not enough rescues.
And I read that you have turned your basement, the basement of your home, into a kind of a shelter for these dogs. Is that right?
Yes, it is. This is run out of my home between my wife and I. We have
hope she's on board with this.
Oh. Yes. Absolutely. You know, when we started Hope for All Dogs back in 2012, my wife and I had always rescued our own pets as personal animals. Mm-hmm. And we're very drawn to senior and special needs animals just because they're the ones that usually are euthanized highly right. in animal control facilities. Some of the examples of dogs we take in are dogs who have heartworms. We've taken in several hit by car dogs that needed amputations done. Our main focus is to rescue, rehome, and rehabilitate. Okay. A lot of our animals, it's harder to place because they are senior and special needs animals. Our numbers, usually on a yearly basis, we can place anywhere from 18 to 24 dogs. I know that doesn't sound a lot, but when you're dealing with the dogs that we rescue, it is a great goal for that.
And there are multiple agencies. How many different agencies are there around the Charlotte area who deal with what you deal with, who do what you do or do the parts one, of what you do?
The ones that deal with what Tim does, senior mm-hmm. and special needs, I think he's the only one.
Wow.
And that's what's so important. I mean, there are a whole lot of rescues here, but a lot of rescues look at a senior or special needs dog and think they're not highly adoptable. We're not going to turn this dog over quickly. They're going to sit here for a year. You know, and that's why Tim and Lisa do is so important mm-hmm. because those dogs would be dead without Tim and Lisa.
It's amazing. I mean, I hate to bring up the question of money, Mike. But in rescue, we often have to make tough decisions because of financial considerations. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not always the right answer, but it's sometimes we are limited. And I bring that up because I think that some rescues are forced to make some of those trade-offs mm-hmm. because we could spend, and I'm going to start crying about this, you know, mm-hmm. we could spend thousands of dollars on one animal that would allow us to place literally 100 more.
Mm-hmm. And so when you say you have to make tough decisions, you are saying that's a code word.
That's a code word.
That you have to allocate your resources. You only have a finite amount of money. So some dogs are going to go bye bye.
And cats. I want to throw right. cats in here too because right. I foster cats and kittens.
But not all of them can make it because of monetary.
That's right. So let me give you an example. Just yesterday, the Greater Charlotte SPCA lost two of our fosters. Both had extreme medical conditions. Now, as it turns out, both of those, a little white kitten and a bulldog.
I was going to ask if you were talking about the foster owners or the foster pets.
The foster pets? Okay. Yes, let me be clear. Yes, although we actually did lose a member of the animal community, a very strong foster, Karen Penrod, that I'd like to give a shout out to because she rescued mm-hmm. hundreds of animals recently lost to cancer. But no, in this case, I was talking about a little white kitten who was born with Manx syndrome and a bulldog who had been with us for a while with just extenuating health circumstances. Now, in those two cases, we did whatever we could. Our vet partners, and I think all of my rescue colleagues would agree with this, our vet partners are so generous with their time and resources Absolutely. Contributing to this. But unfortunately, in these two cases just yesterday, their medical issues were just so extreme that we decided to love them till the end and let them go.
All of you are volunteers, and many of you have devoted thousands of hours to this. I'm just curious as to how it all started and why it all started for you. Daryl, let me start with you with from Fur Babies. Why did you become interested in this and end up devoting so much time to this?
Well, I guess my heart and my spirit calls me to do this. I feel like I need to do things for animals and people who don't have a voice. So I was a therapeutic foster parent for a while with children, mm-hmm. and then now with the animals, and I am very drawn to seniors too. So I just feel compelled to help. I just feel like I'm not accomplishing my life's goal unless I'm helping. So okay.
And Tim, your case, I think, is extraordinary because you house these animals in your home. And as you say, you can only take about 24 of them at a time, and they're hard to place. So you're bringing in animals that you want to place, but they're difficult to place. And so that's a heavy burden, it seems to me.
Yes, it is. And I correct you. I'm sorry. We do currently house 15 dogs at any given time. Your question earlier about how do we get these dogs? One of the most difficult things is to go into an animal control facility where they unfortunately have to euthanize animals due to space. Mm-hmm. Is to walk into a kennel and look at one particular dog and say, I can save you, but unfortunately, you can't help the other one. Right. Just because space and limited resources, they do become an issue.
So given that, given the monetary constraints, given the fact that you're turning over the basement of your house to these animals, and you can't keep them all forever, you have to try to find placement for them, and that's got to be difficult, not only physically difficult and time-consuming, but it's got to be emotionally difficult. So why did you start this? What keeps you going?
We started it because in the Charlotte area and in the surrounding areas, the overwhelming need for animals to be rescued is just is completely overwhelming.
Why you and not the next door neighbor?
It has to be a passion. You hear people say, if I had 10 acres, I'd take in, 100 dogs. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't understand the concept of how much effort goes into this when you're running a rescue.
Right.
You do a lot of self-sacrifices for things. There's just so many different aspects that go into it. There's no sick days. There's no vacations.
You're going to make me ask the question again. Why do you do this?
There's nights where in the middle of the night you have an issue with the dog and you have to rush the dog to the emergency vet.
So he has little control over his time because they're physically located in his home, and many people do this. What about the rest of you? I know you're not, Kristen. I don't think you do this in your home, but you are a volunteer and you're a board member and you have a career. Why?
I do actually foster. In fact, I have to put in a note for my beautiful foster kitty right now, Regina George, who is a beautiful blonde mean girl. She is a she's a wonderful kitty, but she definitely has the attitude, and so she's looking for a single cat household. So, Mike, I think for me, so I grew up, I literally never owned a doll. I only had stuffed animals, and I would have them piled around me at night, and they all had names and they all had personalities. And when I went to college, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I actually took one of my teddy bears with me. And then after that, when I graduated from grad school, the first thing I did is replace that teddy bear with two live kittens who were with me for one for 14 years and one for 17 years. Mm-hmm. And it just grew from there. And I'll tell you what it really is, Mike, puppy dog eyes.
There was an article in the New York Times over the weekend about that. It was reprinted, I think, in the paper this morning, in the Observer this morning, that it releases oxytocin. we'll come back and talk
about
it. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Wine Vault, hosting a brunch Sunday at noon featuring Flora Springs Wines at Passionate of Elizabeth with five courses and five wines. Seating is limited. Reservations at 704-548-WINE. And the Jazz Arts Initiative, Grammy winner Delphio Marsalis, plays music of jazz icon Duke Ellington April 30th for a Jazz Appreciation Month celebration at Blumenthal's McGlowan Theater. Tickets available at blumenthalarts.org. When it comes to things like smartphones, tablets, computers, TVs, many of us migrate very quickly from old devices to the newest and think nothing of just tossing the old stuff out. Well, maybe we should. According to the EPA, more than 2.5 million tons of electronic or e-waste is produced every year in the U.S. alone. And some of these things end up in landfills, and that can be very bad for the environment. So on Earth Day, tomorrow at 9, we look at all this right here.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Political crises in the Middle East and North Africa are fueling the world's worst refugee catastrophe in decades. The latest on the plight of millions of displaced people and new pressures on the U.S. and Western Europe to step in.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about animals that are rescued and then put into foster care and hopefully into new owners' care. These animals have been abused, neglected, abandoned, whatever. But it happens all over town, and it happens all the time. And we have people who are all volunteers in this activity. Daryl Wagner is the president and director of Fur Babies Animal Rescue. We'll find out more about your organization in a second. Tim Roney is the founder of Hope for All Dogs, who handles a lot of senior dogs and dogs with special needs. Megan Masters is an animal advocate and owner of Madam Masters House of Burlesque, stripping dogs. we'll talk about why she's here in a second. And Kristen Johnson is a rescue volunteer for the Greater Charlotte SPCA. We were talking just prior to the break. This came up about this story that was in the Times and in the Observer, I think, today, about what happens when a dog looks into your eyes. That little puppy dog eye thing is real. When a dog is looking at you, he's bonding with you. And if you look back, you bond with him or her, and it actually releases it's a chemical reaction in both your bodies that calms you and relaxes you and leads to more care, which leads to the question, why do some people not experience that? Why do some people treat their animals, I mean, just atrociously? How can they do it when they look into those little puppy dog or little kitty cat eyes? How can they do it?
I think it's the same people that treat other people badly. I think that there's just something missing in their brains. Mm. You know, I think that it definitely correlates. You'll see people that, you know, treat their children badly, who treat other people badly, who are rude to people. You know, I mean, not everyone is a kind, loving person, you know. So I think it's just the exact same with dogs.
There was a puppy mill bill that did not make it through the legislature last session, which I think has been reintroduced and is working its way through again this session. Are you all familiar with that bill? Yep. What would it do, and would it make things better?
It absolutely would make things better. We see all the time – well, two things. One, we see all the time where they find these puppy mills and they're in such horrific conditions that the owners of the puppy mills have to surrender the dogs, which floods the local shelter and causes, you know, just a lot of problems for the shelter itself.
So this bill would do what?
It would actually help to, number one, keep the animals, put the animals into a more humane situation. In other words, they would not be in a situation where they were being overbred and in awful conditions and so on.
Given what you know as volunteers and people who run and participate in organizations that rescue animals and then put them back into good homes, one hopes. Is there ever a need for somebody who wants a pet to go to a puppy mill, or even to a pet store?
Never.
Oh, absolutely not.
Not to a pet store or a puppy mill. No.
Not to a responsible breeder.
Yeah.
There are very responsible breeders out there. Mm-hmm. And while I personally have chosen to adopt or have rehoming situations for all my personal pets, good conditions, well loved, well taken care of, small breeders. There's nothing wrong with that. Mike, do you know the conditions at puppy mills? Have you read or talked about it?
I've read about it. Yeah.
So I was part of a poll to go get the animals. So not only do I have the information that you read, I have firsthand visual knowledge of it. And I can't tell you how appalling it is.
Oh, it's
multiple. I mean, Tim, absolutely.
Yes, it's absolutely disgusting. You go in these places and, you know, the environment's horrendous.
Oh. Multiple puppies in a single pen can't get out.
Yes.
Feces.
Back on top of one another. The smell is just, it's something you will never forget.
The
and
female.
You look at these animals and, you know, they're helpless. A lot of dogs in these situations, they're never let outside. You get these dogs, and for the first time, they experience walking in grass, having attention. So having a warm place to sleep at night and a cool environment in the summer.
But the other side of that coin is by buying from the puppy mill, you're taking that animal out of that horrific environment. Is that not a good
not the
buying?
Breeder dogs, not the males and the females that are breeding the dogs.
I see.
And those are the ones that are in the horrific situations. The puppies are only there sometimes only 6 weeks, and that's another problem is that they try to sell them quickly and get them out.
Is the other problem with the overabundance of animals, unwanted animals, stray animals, feral animals? Is it that we don't – not enough people spay or neuter their pets?
Absolutely.
That's one of the
I
believe.
Is it the cost that deters them, or is it that they think they're hurting the animal or making them less masculine or feminine by spaying or neutering them?
Yes, we hear that all the time. My dog will be girly. My dog will be less masculine. Mm-hmm. My dog won't have the same personality if I spay or neuter them. Well, that's not true. A lot of times, if you neuter a male dog, it keeps them from getting certain types of cancer. Female dogs as well keeps them from getting certain kinds of cancer. It also helps with some hormonal issues as well. So it
and that
can
would
actually
translate
help
to behavior.
Yes, it will help. Yeah, it can help with some behavior issues, marking and things like that as well. It will help stop that with male dogs. Mm-hmm. So I don't see any negatives to spaying or neutering an animal. I only see positives.
And there are plenty of clinics that do it very reasonably. Spay Neuter Charlotte is a magnificent clinic, and they have great rates, and then they have specials often. So
we have. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say there's no reason financially not to do it. And they have grants and things like that that they can help people that don't have the money to do it, even though it's a low cost.
We have a county run, I believe we have a county run animal shelter, CMPD Animal Care and Control picks up strays and things like that. If we have that, why do we need you?
So the Greater Charlotte SPCA has a great partnership with Animal Control, and the people who work there are loving, caring, amazing, and compassionate. We are fortunate here in Mecklenburg County that Animal Control does have certain resources. So unlike some other shelters in the state, you know, they really do the best they can. The reason they need us, Mike, quite frankly, is space. The more that we can place animals out in foster homes, the more that they can take in those additional strays, the more that they can help them, the more that they can take owner surrenders, the more that they can bring in. And by placing more and more animals in foster care, not only do we clear up space at Animal Control, but we have the opportunity to learn their personalities if we need to rehabilitate like Tim does, if we need to make sure they have the best possible home. So fosters who stay with me have to deal with 10 other pets because I have 10 permanent pets. So I can tell you definitively whether they get along with other cats or dogs. So I think it's that what we talked about earlier, which is that extended network of rescue that allows more and more to be helped. Mm-hmm.
So when an animal is found in a bad situation, whether it's abandoned, whether it's been neglected, it hasn't been fed properly, it's been chained to a tree for most of its life, whatever it may be, whatever the conditions the animal comes from and whatever reason the animal is removed from a situation – how do they come to you? Do they automatically come to you? Does Mecklenburg County or CMPD Animal Care Control ask you to take some of these animals? Do you come to the rescue yourself because you become aware of it? How does it happen?
All of the above. I think the other thing that – just going back to the other question, I think it's important to note too, animal control in most counties in North Carolina are not just about dogs and cats. They're about raccoons and possums and all of the above, pigs and whatever. So they're – and they are mandated by the Department of Agriculture, and there's nothing in that mandate that requires that they have live releases. In other words, their primary concern is the control of the animal population and the control of disease that those animals may create. So we are on the, you know, on we are responsible for educating the public to that too, I feel. I feel it's very important for us to let people know that, you know, that people want to shake their finger at the shelter, at the animal control agencies, but they're doing their job. They're required to do this by the state agriculture, you know.
So and I think the biggest public service announcement that we can give this morning is that if you find a stray animal, the first thing you should do is report that to Animal Control. That doesn't mean you have to surrender them to them, but to report them, because Animal Control is one of our, at least here in Mecklenburg County, it's one of our first lines of defense for reuniting pets with their families.
Yes, and also another aspect of it is to get your dog microchipped.
Oh, absolutely,
Microchipped.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's for location purposes or identification purposes?
Identification. If a dog gets out, most rescues, animal control facilities, and vets have what's known as a scanner.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately they scan a dog. If the dog is microchipped, there is a barcode. What happens with that barcode is you call one of the manufacturers, 24 Pet Watch, Avid, Home Again. They put this all now into a national database. They contact the owner and say, we have your dog. Come get it, please. Most dogs and most strays are a result of a dog getting out and simply not being microchipped.
Talk to me about rehabilitation. Some of these animals have been physically abused. Some of these animals have been psychologically abused.
Mm-hmm.
Can they be rehabilitated? Can they be turned into safe and loving animals that children, even adults, can really be around? Or are there some animals that have been so abused that they can't be reversed?
Most of the time they can. You learn a lot about forgiveness with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try not to cry here. I apologize. But I've seen dogs come from dogfighting operations. As soon as they walk off that property, they're a different dog. They know that they can trust the people that they're with. They know that they're not going to be hurt anymore. And so they turn into completely different dogs. You can learn a lot about forgiveness and moving past the situation and things like that with these abused dogs.
You, Megan.
Yes.
Are not only an animal advocate, you are a pit bull advocate.
Yes,
and a
sir.
Lot of people, because of stories in the news about dog fighting and things like mm-hmm. that, are scared to death. They won't get out of a car if they see a pit bull in the yard, even if it's chained up. Tell me about pit bulls. Are they victims of bad press?
Oh, absolutely. Some of the most loving, tolerant dogs that I've ever met are pit bulls.
But those
came from dog fighting operations.
But then they seem to be – you often hear stories – not often, but sometimes you hear stories that these pit bulls are loving creatures. And all mm-hmm. of a sudden, something snaps and they really hurt somebody.
Any dog or any person is capable of hurting someone else. The issue is how these dogs are raised. If the dogs are raised to be protection dogs, if they are kept on a chain their entire lives, that's abuse. So these dogs are abused and abused and abused, and finally it builds up. You know, it also – you have to understand that people teach these dogs to be what they are. You know, dogs don't make choices like people do. People can say, wake up in the morning and say, I think I'm going to go rob a gas station today. Dogs don't wake up and say, I'm going to bite somebody today. they react to what's happening around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dogs deal with situations by fight, flight, or avoidance. Typically, they will choose to avoid or flee a situation. If they're stuck on a chain, they can't flee if they're scared.
So they
have to defend themselves. Yeah. They feel they have to defend themselves. Right. Also, something very important is for people to teach their children proper respect for animals. If you're out in public, you don't want a child running up to you and jumping on you and grabbing you. You know, it would startle you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so same thing goes with animals. You have to teach them proper respect. Do not pull their tails. Don't pull their ears. Do not sit on the dog under any circumstances. No matter if that dog has never had an issue, no matter if they're the most tolerant dog in the world, it's rude. It's disrespectful. You know, so you have to teach children respect. Same for humans. Adults
and
as well.
Yes. And for your own dogs.
Exactly.
I mean, so one of my permanent dogs is dog aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that. And so I very much control his environment so that he can be happy and healthy and interact with the humans and he's fine with his pack.
Right.
But invariably, we'll be out walking and somebody will have their dog off a leash or on one of those retractable things and mm-hmm. the dog will come running towards mine. And I'm trying to flag the human to say, my dog is aggressive, and they'll be like, oh, well, mine's perfectly friendly. And then they get upset when my Tarek lunges at them.
Right.
So I think it's an education across all elements.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about Hope for All Dogs. Tell me about Fur Babies, Daryl. What exactly do you do?
Fur Babies is a non-breed specific animal rescue, meaning that we will rescue a Chihuahua and a pit bull and everything in between. And my mission is primarily to rescue the dogs that are close to euthanasia. There are a lot of dogs that are highly adoptable. Obviously, we were talking about the financial implications for not adopting more dogs and having adoptable dogs. Mm. So I do absolutely do that.
And you also have a program, I'm told, with inmates.
I do, yes.
Rehabilitating the dog with inmate help and rehabilitating the inmate with dog help.
Right,
if that
absolutely,
makes sense.
Yeah. At Brown Creek Correctional, we have a program called New Leash on Life with the Department of Public Safety, which used to be the Department of Corrections in North Carolina. And each eight-week period, we bring a new group of dogs in. We have five in there right now, and we will be able to go up to six, and then I hope to expand it to the next facility. So I'm just going to grow this program because I love it so much. But it is the dogs go in. They are with their inmates 24/7 except for when they're sleeping. The inmates, I have two professional trainers who go in, Maggie and Elizabeth, here's a shout out to you. They go in once a week and train the inmates how to train the dogs. So the dogs come out with the ability to get their good citizenship certificate, which is it's the first step toward therapy dog training. Mm-hmm. And when I say the ability to get, we don't give them a good citizenship certificate in prison. They have to then do their commands and do all of their things for their new owners in order to be awarded their certificate. But it's just a fantastic program. It's a win-win-win. It's a win for the dogs, obviously. Most of the dogs that go in there have some sort of issue. They may have some fear aggression. They may have some anxiety issues. They may have it could be just anything. You know, I've put all kinds of different dogs in there, but because of the specific attention they get, it's a wonderful thing.
And Kristen, I was surprised actually when I read that the SPCA, the Greater Charlotte SPCA, started only in 2010. I thought you'd been around for 100 years.
Hey, we like to hear that. So one of the things about the Greater Charlotte SPCA, and I'm going to emphasize this for Fur Babies as well as Hope for All Dogs and for Madam Master's House of Burlesque, who's benefiting them, we are very heavily reliant on donations. So just because a name has to do with a national organization doesn't mean we're associated with that national association.
Yeah, you're not associated with the SPCA.
No, the Greater Charlotte SPCA has no association. Is it the Sarah McLaughlin commercials that right. make everybody cry and turn the channel? We get no money, nor are we an affiliate of the ASPCA. We're independent. And so one of the best ways that people can help their local animals is by donating to groups like all of ours represented here.
Plus, it seems to me this is an enormous expense for volunteers and for volunteer organizations, because you're not just housing an inanimate object. You're housing a living creature who has to be fed, who needs medical attention, has to have shots, has to be tagged and licensed, has to be rehabilitated in some cases. Where does the money come from?
As nonprofits, we rely heavily on public donations. That's how many of us are supported. We do also hold fundraisers to help bring in money to be able to care for these animals. Megan has been so gracious enough to put on a fundraiser that will benefit both Hope for All Dogs and Fur Babies.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to talk about that when we come back in a second, because it's a first. I think it's a first possibly in the animal world, and it's certainly a first for this show. We'll come back and talk about it in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mecklenburg County Solid Waste. Food waste and yard trimmings make up the majority of the overall waste sent to landfills. By home composting food waste and lawn clippings, individuals can make a difference. Classes and information at wipeoutwaste.com. And communities and schools investing in Charlotte's future by bringing together corporate, faith, and community partners to help students be successful in school and in life. Details at cischarlotte.org. Political crises in the Middle East and North Africa are fueling the world's refugee catastrophe, the world's worst refugee catastrophe in decades. They're going to talk about the latest on the plight of millions of displaced people and new pressures on the U.S. and Western Europe to step in on the Diane Rehm Show. And that's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, and we are coming right back.
Morning Edition is awake around the clock to bring you the latest news.
It's 2:10 in the morning, so still 5 hours left.
The hosts are usually here around 3:30.
You have Ophibia at 4, and it's about the Boko Haram ISIS news over the weekend.
Crunch time is 4 a.m.
Until 5 when the show starts.
Hit it. Open.
Good morning, I'm David Green. With
Morning Edition. Up all night to bring you all you need to know. Listen every weekday.
Morning Edition from 5 until 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about abandoned pets, stray pets, neglected, abused pets, and what happens to them after they are recovered from those situations with four volunteers who do things, nice things, for these animals. Tim Roney is the founder of Hope for All Dogs. He rescues dogs that need special treatment and senior dogs who are difficult to place because, well, they're elderly and they have special needs. Yeah. Daryl Wagner is the president and director of Fur Babies Animal Rescue. Kristen Johnson is a rescue volunteer and one of the founders and a board member of the Greater Charlotte SPCA. And Megan Masters is an animal advocate and a volunteer and the owner of Madam Masters House of Burlesque. Now, why is she here? Let me tell you why she's here. Because she's doing a benefit show, a performance to benefit both Fur Babies and Hope for All Dogs. I hesitate to ask, what is Madam Masters House of Burlesque?
Okay, Madam Masters House of Burlesque is a classic style burlesque show. It's more vaudeville. I promise it's not
a lot
risque.
Of people don't know what vaudeville
right.
is.
Right.
That was the 1910s and 20s. So.
Right. It's a variety type show.
Uh-huh.
So we have male.
Think Ed Sullivan.
Exactly. More like that. Yes. Kind of. With Ed Sullivan with corsets. I guess.
think Gypsy Rose Lee.
Yes. Closer, yeah.
Okay.
But also we have some male performers as well. So it's a true variety show. We have an aerialist that works on silks. We have all kinds of different things. It's just a true variety show. But the issue was people didn't know what vaudeville was. So right. I had to call it something that was a vintage throwback, mm-hmm. but that people could understand and conceptualize what the show will look like.
They think they know what burlesque is,
right.
but not what vaudeville is.
Well, see, people
is.
Think they think what they know about pit bulls.
Ah.
they think what they know about burlesque.
But your show is rated PG-13. What fun is that?
I know. Well, see, we have some 16 and 17-year-old performers, so it can't be too risque.
Okay.
I just wanted to find the most talented people that I could find and put them together for the show.
Singers, dancers, novelty acts.
Exactly.
Things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Some comedy, things like that.
And this is taking place at Amos's South End on mm-hmm. April the 26th.
Yep.
And all the money collected goes to these two organizations here.
It does.
Interesting. How what do you expect? What is your anticipation?
Well, I hope a lot of people come. but the doors open at 6. We're going to have food trucks, a silent auction and raffle. The main show will start at 7:30. So it's a whole lot of fun. We'll have some vendors there as well that are selling some products, some local mm-hmm. people that are selling
okay.
their products as well. So we wanted to keep it as local as we could.
There's also the Greater Charlotte SPCA's, I hope I say this correctly, Extravaganza Party. Is that right?
That is correct.
Extravaganza
yes.
Dog Anza Party on May the 8th. What is that?
That's right. And I what I want to emphasize here, Mike, is that as you look, I know that the listeners can't see us, but I think it's safe to say that none of us look like the stereotypical crazy animal people. I mean, we all have different personas and different ways of projecting. And so emphasizing these two events that are coming up is a way of showing, you know, there's a lot to the animal rescue
right.
community. So, so yes, the Greater Charlotte SPCA is having our inaugural Extravaganza on May 8th at the Extravaganza Depot. It's the theme this year is the Barking 20s. And the best thing is, Mike, you can bring your dog.
The Barking 20s, going back to the Roaring 20s? Is that what
yes, exactly.
You should bring
exactly.
in, you should bring in
actually,
the Vaudeville
to be honest, Megan and I have collaborated quite a bit. And we may have some of her performers come in and make this a joint effort going forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we as the Greater Charlotte SPCA, we're keeping this event separate and we don't
right.
want to take away from the
right.
money Megan is raising for these
right.
two other groups.
Right.
But we'd love to have you come out.
Because this does take a lot of money to feed and house a dog and get their medical attention and particularly when they've been abused, it takes a lot of money. Now, I know that there's been a controversy in recent days or recent months over whether or not when you are shopping a dog out, when a person who wants a pet comes to you and they want Fido, mm-hmm. Some of you used to charge, I don't know if anybody at this table used to charge, but you used to charge an adoption fee, and that adoption fee would defray the costs that you have incurred.
Some of the costs.
Mm-hmm. And now I'm told that you're not allowed to do that. Why not?
No,
that's not true at all.
No, really? we are allowed to and do. I have a set adoption rate. So if a dog is $1,500 worth of medical costs and so on and so forth, it still is the lower adoption rate and so on. But yes, we can absolutely charge an adoption fee.
And you're not in danger of losing your – because I've read some stories yesterday about this, that some organizations were in danger of losing their
501c3.
Nonprofit – yes, their 501c3 a nonprofit status because people were, in fact, Hope for All Dogs.
Yeah.
I believe. Did you not receive a citation, the result of which is that you have to limit your dogs to 15, license every dog and cat in foster care, and discontinue adoption fees? Isn't that part of the deal?
Yes, it is.
Why can't you charge adoption fees and she can?
We asked for a donation to help us.
But why can't you? Why do they say you couldn't?
That was just an issue of having animals for profit. As a nonprofit, you rely solely on donations. So
what's the difference?
I guess really what he's saying is the way we our contracts are written too, that it is a donation. It is considered a donation to the rescue whenever you pay. I mean, you know, people consider it an adoption fee, I guess, because they get a dog for it, but contractually, it is a donation to the rescue.
But is it a set amount? When you say donation, do you say the donation has to be X dollars, or it's whatever you want to pay?
It varies. I mean, we certainly accept donations of any monetary amount, but
to adopt one of our dogs at the Greater Charlotte SPCA or one of our cats, there are set rates depending on the age of the animal, and a variety of other factors associated with it. And Mike, I'm actually really surprised to hear that. So to break down the numbers for you, let's say that our adoption fee is $175 for a dog. That covers their entire first-year vet bill that you would pay upwards of $350 to $500 at a private vet to be able to cover. And part of the rationale for whether you call it a donation or charging a fee, some of it is continuing to emphasize the financial responsibility of having a pet. Mm-hmm. In addition to adoption fees, we get criticized for having an adoption process. At the Greater Charlotte SPCA, we insist on an application, references, and a home visit before we place an animal with you. It's not because we don't trust our potential adopters. It's we want the best situation for our animals, but we also want the best situation for our adopters. And so all of these components are part of educating our potential adopters about what the responsibility of a pet is.
Do you turn
not
people
just
down?
Financial.
Do you turn them down?
We do turn people down. Yeah.
Based on?
Based on if there is a concern in the house and based on the animal. So let me give you an example, Mike. Some of my fosters. Now, one of my foster dogs would do very, very well with, for example, a controversial invisible fence. So I placed him with a family with an invisible fence. I also foster greyhounds. Greyhounds could never be placed with a family that only had an invisible fence because they go so quickly, I mean, 60 miles an hour in their ramp up faster than my car, that they would go right through. So it's a case-by-case consideration on what's best for both sides. I can give you another example. A good friend of mine was declined by the Greater Charlotte SPCA for the first puppy that she applied for. The second one that she applied for, she adopted. We said, please take, we'd love to have you have this dog. So it's a case-by-case matching of the adoptive family.
Do the two of you, Tim and Daryl, have similar
Absolutely.
Criteria and stories
yes.
about them?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we
yes.
do go through a thorough screening process. Our main goal is to place a dog one time and one time only. We are very open and honest right from the get-go about the dog's temperament. If he would do good in a home with small children, mm-hmm. if he would do good in a home with cats or dogs. And we match that criteria to each individual basis. Mm-hmm. a lot of times, you know, yes, a potential adopter isn't the best situation for the dog. You know, unfortunately, that's part of our process.
I was also surprised to find that there's a whole foster pet owner system set up out there mm-hmm. for people who will take these animals temporarily mm-hmm. until a good home can be found for them. That strikes me as being terribly difficult because if you're a pet person, if you're an animal person, it's really easy to form an attachment to an animal that you know is not going to be in your home for all that long. And to give that animal up after a certain period of time because you found a good home for it mm-hmm. has to be difficult. So why would you do it more than once?
I probably get that question as much as anything. Uh-huh. How do you do it? How do you let them go? I think, number one, there are people that are able to and there are people that aren't able to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know that for myself and for most of the people that I know that foster and are in rescue, they understand that when you have brought that dog in, you've saved a life. When you have rehabilitated it or gotten it ready to go to its forever home, you have done something. And when you allow it to leave, you have opened a space for another life to be saved.
So these yeah. dogs and cats come to you. You rehabilitate them, work with them, feed them. I was going to say clothe them. Get them their shots, take them through right. the spay and neuter process. How do people find out? And some of them go into foster care. Mm-hmm. How do people then find out about the animals that are in foster care? How do you, if somebody comes to you and you know, they see a puppy and they don't want that particular puppy, how do you say, oh, you know, I have a dog in foster care that you might, does that happen?
There are quite a few sites, and it's very well known as rescue becomes more popular, that you can go on Pet Finder, Adopt a Pet, and many, many, many other sites that you can go on to see the lists of dogs that are available, dogs and cats that are mm-hmm. available for adoption. And I guess all animals, but really primarily dogs and cats. And it, you can put in search criteria. You can look for a small dog. You can look for a large dog. You can do whatever. So I use those sites to list all of my available dogs. I also have a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's a really good for two reasons. One is because I list all the dogs there as they're coming in. So sometimes they get attention when I pick them up at the shelter. I always do what I call a freedom ride picture. And so they see a dog in its original form. Sometimes it's not a very pretty sight, but then they get to watch the dog through rehab, which is kind of neat. You know, people like that. It's also educational, you know. So Fur Babies Animal Rescue on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I'd love for everyone to go on and like that page and
Tim?
Keep up with that.
Yeah.
Similar story?
Yes. All of our animals are listed on Pet Finder, Adopt-A-Pet, Pet Harbor, and that is a very good resource. Right now, social media is a great way to get your name out there. One of the greatest things when you're talking about fostering is to get a dog in to see its condition. I think a lot of people, when they see a dog that's over adoption, that the condition is in now is the original condition it was when we got the dog, and that's not the case. Give an example, I about 2 months ago took in a German Shepherd from Animal Control who was pretty much used as a bait dog. All four of his canines were filed down, has scars on his face. Mm. When I went in there to look at him, he did everything he could to get away from me, as far as hiding in the kennel, cowering down, submissive peeing. Within a few weeks, he's gained weight. He is going through heartworm treatment. He is at the vet right now being neutered, having blood work, having a dental done, and he's going to a loving home this weekend.
Good. Both of your organizations, Fur Babies and Hope for All Dogs, have these vetting programs to vet new owners, potential owners to the pets, to make sure that they don't go back into a bad situation.
Right.
Yes, we offer a lifetime commitment to the animals that we take in. Mm-hmm. First part of our adoption process is to do an interaction to where we have all family members, any current pets come out, do an interaction. Mm-hmm. If everything goes well, they can take the pet home. We do offer a 10-day trial period to allow for the dog to adjust to their new home, to see if it is or it isn't going to work out. And we also honor a lifetime commitment to the animal.
So you'll take it back.
Yeah. Absolutely. We put so much time, effort, and resources to the animal. The last thing we want to see is for that dog or cat end back into a animal control facility or negative situation.
Before we run out of time, let me share with you some things that have come in on email and Facebook while we've been talking. Bill and Matthews, I have a friend who rescues abandoned animals, and she says many are dumped along the greenways. Is anything being done to discourage this? Also, there was an NPR story the other day about cancer in animals that live with smokers. Long snout dogs apparently usually get mouth cancer, while short snout dogs get lung cancer. Have you experienced any of this in any of your rescues?
Yes.
Lots of cancer. Mm-hmm. Lots of cancer. And I'm not sure if that's because there are more opportunities to identify it as such. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I have ever identified it as being living in a home with smokers. But
no,
just,
I think a lot of it has to do with overbreeding the animal.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree, too.
Shelby, on Facebook, my fiance and I rescued a pit bull recently who we recognized as belonging to our neighbor and who showed up at our door one night severely emaciated. She turned out to have heartworms and several other infections. When her owner didn't show up to claim her, we took on her care and costs and brought her back to health thanks to some generous donations from friends and family. She's now called Sweet Pea and is a wonderful addition.
Shelby, thank you for doing that.
And is a wonderful addition to our pack. Amy emails as a volunteer with a pit bull type dog specific rescue. I have seen the good and the bad of the rescue world. I have over 100 dogs in my home over the years as fosters. I do it because dogs remind me of all the good in the world. I do what I do because it makes me a better person. All the facts show that pit bull attacks are overreported, and we should remember that pit bull is not a single breed. It's a group of breeds that includes over 40 different types of dogs. Responsible ownership and proper training are key. House Bill 751 needs our full support.
Absolutely.
Thank you all for the hour. I have no idea what it costs to do what you do, but I know it's more than you take in adoption fees, so donations are needed. And if you're an animal lover, even if you can't afford to or have a need for a pet in your home, you can help out in that way. Daryl Wagner with Fur Babies, Tim Roney with Hope for All Dogs, Megan Masters, Masters House of Burlesque, Kristen Johnson with the SPCA.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation online, visit our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and